Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life. The Israel Report with Rolene Marks.
It is 7:44. I'm Howard Feldman. Good morning. Rolene Marks, good morning to you. How are you?
Good morning. What a way to start the day. And such a beautiful rain here in Israel. As you know, Israelis get just a little meshuggah when the first rains come.
So, and this is the season, right? Because Israel, of course, experiences a winter rainfall being a Mediterranean climate.
We do indeed experience a winter rain that blows sideways, and no matter how many umbrellas you have, you are still going to get wet. But all part of the joy of living in Israel.
And of course, it's also because summer is so hot and so dry and dusty. Well, I mean, it's humid in some areas, but you've got the desert sands. The first rains must be so welcome that it settles everything down a little bit.
Well, it settles the atmosphere. I don't know if it settles Israelis. I don't think anything could ever.
You're going to need more than rain, Rolene. Much more than rain to do
much
that.
Much more than rain.
And of course, the other place that needs to be settled down is the United Nations. They've come out with a 28-page report calling Israel occupiers. Are we shocked?
We're not shocked, because let's break this down. First of all, let's look at who is putting this report together. And this is the United Nations Human Rights Council's Commission of Inquiry. And we know that their mandate going ahead was to look at crimes committed by Israel. Of course, nothing's committed by the Palestinians. No pay for slay, no terrorism, no genocidal charters, nothing. Nothing to see there, Howard, nothing there at all. First of all, let's look at who sits on this commission of inquiry. I mean, all three commissioners have come under criticism and opprobrium for their anti-Semitic remarks. I mean, we had that whole issue with Milun Kotari, you know, claiming that the Jewish lobby controls social media and saying that Israel actually shouldn't be at the United Nations at all, not to mention Navi Pillay, who has a long standing hostility against Israel. You know, she has supported BDS. She has called Israel an apartheid state. She has supported petitions against the state of Israel. So we already have an established bias. And the third commissioner as well, who has made anti-Semitic comments. All of these comments roundly condemned by countries around the world. Nevertheless, they went ahead with this ludicrous report. I mean, the accusations are just extraordinary. First of all, they accuse Israel of violating international law by its control over the West Bank. Now, they say it makes control over the West Bank permanent. We have always said it is disputed territory. International law, if you know international law, regards territories, in this case, where there is no final negotiated settlement, it is still regarded as disputed territory, which is subject to final negotiations. And of course, no accusations are leveled at the Palestinians for not coming to the negotiation table. They're also, and this is just absolutely, this to me is medieval. They accuse Israel of stealing natural resources and of gender-based violence against Palestinian women. This is absolutely outrageous. I mean, we have had situations where women have faced honor killings in the Palestinian areas. We haven't had accusations of gender-based violence against Israelis at all, if there have been any. We have had accusations of Palestinian rapes of Israeli women. Of course, that doesn't find its way into the sham of a report. And taking natural resources. Can they please tell us what natural resources we are supposedly taking?
The other thing that I find just fascinating on a basic concept level is, who is Israel occupying this land from. Between 1948 and 1967, this disputed territory belonged, was part of Jordan. Jordan made no attempt to create a Palestinian state during that time at all. Is it Jordan who wants this land back, or is it a state that has yet to be formed?
Well, let's be very, very clear. A state of Palestine has never existed. That area, as you so correctly said, did belong to Jordan. And with all conflicts, with all wars, territories are won and lost. And this is still subject to negotiation. I mean, let's call this what it is. It is a sham of a report. It is an attempt to use lawfare by the Commission of Inquiry, which should have been disbanded, even before it was set up. This is nothing less than a witch hunt against Israel. They want to take this to the General Assembly and have Israel accused of being an occupier. Now, of course, they are backed up by the reports from Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch. And it really is not dramatic to say that this is a campaign that has been worked on very, very carefully and methodically and with a lot of backing since the early 2000s.
And it's almost building castles in the sand, because each report, which is a bit of a sham, then builds on the next one, which is quite remarkable. Can we just also talk about the Australia-Jerusalem debacle? What happened there?
Yes, let's break this down, because this has caused a lot of upset around the world. Very, very quietly on Sunday over the weekend, when Jews around the world were celebrating Simchat Torah, a celebration that reminds us of our connection to the land of Israel, to Jerusalem, you know, where we start to celebrate receiving the Torah and reading it again. We have this very quiet removal of recognition of West Jerusalem as Israel's capital by the new Labour-led Australian Foreign Ministry. Now, it's absolutely preposterous, because all of Israel's political bodies all sit in West Jerusalem. If you are the Foreign Minister of Australia and you are meeting with our Foreign Minister, who's also our Prime Minister, you're going to meet in Jerusalem. And it is roundly accepted that, in a final negotiation, at least from the international community's perspective, West Jerusalem will be the capital of Israel. Israel's perspective, Israel's position on this is very, very firm. Jerusalem is our eternal undivided capital. This is the capital that was established by King David, and despite exile, despite occupation, and by occupation I mean various occupations of the land of Israel by the Turks, the Mamluks, the Arabs, the Romans, various others, we have always had a Jewish presence in Jerusalem, where our two temples were built, where our very, very soul, our history, where Isaac was sacrificed by Abraham. Almost everything is centered around Jerusalem. We say next year in Jerusalem. It is part of the Jewish DNA. It's part of our soul. And of course, they did this without any prior warning to Israel, which is a breach of diplomatic etiquette, something that they have taken cognizance of. And of course, when this was found out, it caused ructions around the world. The Australian ambassador was summoned for a very, very harsh reprimand by our Prime Minister, who called it a wretched decision, with the intention to make the message and the position from Israel very, very well known in Australia. And the Foreign Minister, Penny Wong, has said, you know, they are aware of the sensitivities, they regret the way that it was handled and that it causes distress. Yesterday, very quietly, they walked back any recognition of East Jerusalem as the hopes for a Palestinian capital. And they say that their position is very clear. Jerusalem for this particular Australian foreign ministry as opposed to others who have been one of Israel's strongest allies is that any status on Jerusalem has to be settled between Israelis and Palestinians.
So it's completely perplexing. So it leaves the position in a very ambiguous, it creates a very ambiguous position as far as Australia is concerned, doesn't it?
It does. This is not how you treat an ally. We have heard Australian lawmakers, senators coming out saying, this is not how we treat Israel, one of our greatest allies. This behavior by our government is unacceptable. It is not for Australia to decide who another country's capital is. Yeah. I mean, imagine if we said, well, given that you haven't settled with your First Nation Aboriginal people, we're just going to declare the capital of Israel to be, the capital of Australia rather to be Sydney.
Yeah, absolutely. Very, very bizarre. But it does tell you how Israel is viewed, unfortunately, around the world. Ukraine demands of Israeli air defense system. So Israel, of course, as we've spoken about a number of times, in a very precarious position with regard to Ukraine, with Russia standing to some extent between Iran and Israel, or Hezbollah in Syria. Israel's walked a very, very fine line here, but it definitely seems to be shifting a little bit towards support of Ukraine. Give us the latest position.
Well, the latest position is this. We cannot give Ukraine military weapons, for a variety of reasons. The very delicate balance that we also have to walk with Russia. We've already seen aggression towards Israel shown by Russia and threats from Russia that any movement of Israel to give Ukraine Israeli air defense systems will result in a complete breakdown of diplomatic relations. This comes at a time where Russia is becoming increasingly closer to Iran. We have said that we will give an early warning system. We are happy to do that. We will continue with humanitarian aid. We unequivocally condemn Russia's annexation of Ukrainian sovereign territory. We unequivocally condemn the unprovoked aggression from Russia on Ukraine. To say Israel's been neutral, Israel hasn't been neutral.
Not at all.
What Israel has done very, very carefully is not from a military perspective gotten involved. But Ukrainian officials are hell-bent on singling out Israel. Israel must be the one to provide defense systems. They haven't made these demands of any other countries who are in better positions to give arms, because as we all know, Israel is facing our own threats on our borders from Iran and Iran's proxies, and we also have to be prepared for any eventuality.
Yeah. What is the current situation in terms of tension? Is there tension between the Israeli government and Ukraine over this?
Well, that's an interesting question. I've just received a readout that our Prime Minister / Foreign Minister, Yair Lapid, spoke to Dmitry Kuleba. He is the Ukrainian Foreign Minister. He condemned the Russian invasion. He said that, Israel continues to stand with Ukraine and the Ukrainian people, and that he is very concerned about military ties between Iran and Russia. Now, what has been quite a point of tension has been the Ukrainian ambassador to Israel, no great stranger to insulting his host country, by the way, who called Benny Gantz, our defense minister, deeply disappointing cancelling without explanation a phone call with his counterpart. That phone call has been rescheduled, but, there's this propensity for Ukrainian officials to kind of keep putting the pressure on Israel. speaking to leaders of Jewish communities around the world. They are expecting Israel to do more. Well, you know what? Israel is expecting Ukraine to do more when we are in a bind as well as other countries.
Absolutely, and so this will continue. We've got less than a minute, but I did want to hear about the LGBTQ plus artists and others signing a petition against the boycott of the Tel Aviv Film Festival. Tell us about that in less than a minute.
Well, this is a very welcome development. Tel Aviv are hosting the annual LGBTQI film festival, and of course there are those calling for its boycott, but we've had over 200 celebrities, very well-known celebrities, signing a petition to say that they do not support boycotts at all. Boycotts are counterproductive to peace, and we've had people on it like Neil Patrick Harris, you know, Dr. Doogie Howser, Mayim Bialik, Mila Kunis, the wonderful Dame Helen Mirren, Zach Quinto, the musician Sia, Gene Simmons, and a whole host of other celebrities, big celebrities, A-list celebrities, saying that, you know, we do not support these kind of boycotts. Emmanuel Shrieky, Jenna Dewan, Salma Blair, so many, many others.